Maybe the Skadrians will feed her one crab at a time to the snake.
Oh. I don't think we're going to see that happen.
You don't think so?
No, and I don't
each,
think so.
Each little crab would call for help before it dies.
Maybe they just kind of, you know, gladiatorial combat style. It's giant snake versus giant crab being conglomeration, and they go at it Clash of the Titans style.
Or maybe the Malwish make hemallergic spikes out of every single little crab.
Whoa. Welcome back to Following Noadon, the Stormlight Podcast. This is episode 284. We're starting to sneak up towards 300. It's getting exciting. We're also sneaking up on the midpoint, I think we're past it actually, of Isles of the Emberdark. We're going to be talking chapters 34 through 37 today. I'm here with Trevor and Paul as always. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really good. Excited to talk more, getting further into the book, of course. And our Spotify listeners won't notice anything, but there's a huge debacle and we're late starting recording because my camera is framed differently and I don't know what happened, but I'm kind of zoomed in. So I'm feeling
self-conscious about it.
Yes, I'm a bit nervous.
It's okay. The majority of our listeners are simply that, listeners, not viewers. So you'll be fine.
Perfect. Good. But yeah, Trevor, other than that, doing wonderful.
That's good. Thank you. Zoomed in, Paul. Trevor?
Did you guys see the Cosmere news this week?
Oh my goodness. From
Dragon Seal 2025.
Oh yes.
I did.
Sorry, Dragon Seal Nexus 2025. Yes. What we're supposed to call it. Mm-hmm. So as of recording, we're recording this on December 12th. About a week ago, they announced the Fires of December, which I read like a sentence about it, and it's supposed to be like Hoid's stories or something. I don't know, Hoid tales of something. Mm-hmm. Ellie, do you have more information on this?
Slightly more, but not much. The blurb that I saw was, it is going to be a third installment that kind of forms a sort of trilogy with Tress and Yumi. So okay. Tress and Yumi are the told from Hoid's perspective, and it involves Hoid experiencing difficulties. I think Brandon is jokingly calling it the Hoid's Travails trilogy. So I think it's going to be a third story that probably is not about Tress or Yumi, but is told in the same like format as those two.
Cool. That's what I heard as well. Is that it's like how it's narrated by Hoid. I was totally misled at first, thinking, oh, this is a story about Hoid and like Hoid's original travels. And I got really excited, but we are still seeing Hoid's travels, so I am still excited. Just different than what I thought.
But way more importantly, it comes with the Hoid Storybook Collection.
If you're illustrated. Back to
Kickstarter. Illustrated Hoid Storybook Collection. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before. I think I have.
You have, definitely.
The original Dragon Steel convention back in 2021, I attended solo without my podcast co-hosts.
Left us
behind. And Isaac Stewart offhandedly on a panel said, yeah, Dragon Steel's, we're growing now and we'd love to make some picture books of like the Wander Sail and you know some other short stories that are within larger stories. And I got so excited about this, and I have bugged Isaac Stewart personally in person 5 different times since he announced that or offhandedly mentioned it. I have brought it to his attention every Dragon Steel up until this last one. I asked him about it twice that year because I knew he was like this offhand comment, but I wanted to ping his brain about it again because I was personally very excited about it. So much more important than a new Cosmere book is the picture book of the Wander Sail, which is coming at some point. Very excited mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, and it's the Wander Sail, the Girl Who Looked Up, the Dog and the Dragon, and another one? Do y'all remember? I heard the other one. I don't remember then what it was.
I think maybe it was... It's the Chasm Friends.
Yes, that's right. Chasm Friends. Yep. So that sounds really exciting. I just saw like the demo pieces of art that they showcased.
Yeah.
Like as they were announcing this. And it looks pretty amazing. It looks really cool. So I expect that's going to be a big success. I'm excited about that. If I will, I'm going to go and steal the mic again because we also have another exciting announcement. We have a patron this week. It's a patron who we've already shouted out before, but crazy enough, this patron has taken a crazy turn in life, gone from a surgeon to a full-on shard bearer.
Whoa.
Which truly the Kaladin storyline.
This is the Kaladin storyline here, which is really exciting. So on a lovely Weck jar today, we have Anna Rose, not two names, but one name, Anna Rose, beautiful name. And we're very grateful for your support, Anna Rose. So yeah, wonderful. Thank you. That is all.
Paul, before we hit record, you were hyping up the Weck jar, and now I'm a little disappointed that it's just a flower vase.
So what makes this unique is something that I am not showing right now, but it has, apparently these Weck jars are getting quite popular. So the lid is very different. It has like a little like rubber ring and then a lid that you like have these removable clips you clip on. And it's perfect for like sourdough starter and things like that. Sourdough, any kind of fermentation, things like that. It's more purpose driven.
Got it.
There are also a million different types. They don't all look like this. This is apparently like a juice bottle one.
I could see some orange juice in there.
Many, many types, many shapes and sizes. And I think what unites them is more of the lid, which I did not showcase. So I'm sorry about that. But in my life circle, I feel that the Weck jars are growing quite popular. So I was totally bragging about that to Trevor and Elliot before we recorded. Absolutely.
Well, Anna Rose, I hope you like Weck jars. But regardless, thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna Rose. Appreciate it. Okay. Today, we're talking about Isles of Emberdark 34 through 37, and I'm going to try to tackle a summary for you. Here we go. We have opened book 3 in the Isles of the Emberdark, and we have found another isle in the Emberdark. Finally. Dusk has followed his now supernatural gift that he was given by Patchy back, or presumably Patchy, back in the previous episode. And he has followed it, I think, 3 weeks to this new island. And he quickly finds out that that he's not alone out here. The island is occupied by the ones above, or the Malwish, which we'll get into here in a second. And for the first time, Dusk and Starling are in the same scene, which we need to talk about. I'll get back to my intro here in a second. Paul, how confident were you on your page prediction on when Dusk and Starling would exchange dialogue?
Once we hit this chapter, before anything happened, it mentions like an up came like a single man like rowboat, and I was like, okay, there's Dusk. Here we now have them on the same scene. And I knew instantly, I had a moment of fear of they're going to talk right now. And then I thought, no. The question was, when do they first speak a word to each other? And I was like, that was specific. That was very specific. So I instantly was like, it's not going to be this chapter. They're going to get there and they're going to like, there's going to be some dialogue about like, oh, that's a funny looking person or I don't know, whatever. But they weren't going to speak. And I'm really proud of my instincts. One of where I thought the book would go and the phrasing of the question. And I knew this would be a potential hot point on the podcast once we started talking about it.
I need to point out one more specificity in my question. The question was exactly, when will Dusk speak to Starling?
Oh, no.
I was very okay. specific with that.
Okay. All right. So
a bit of a loaded question here.
I have to say this. For all those who put their faith in me, I absolutely got spot on at 100% correct the first time that Starling and Dusk saw each other. I nailed that.
You did.
To the page, I got it. They have not exchanged dialogue yet.
You're correct.
My prediction was in chapter 34.
Mm.
And to be perfectly specific, your guess was, where's my notes? Page 236, which is in the middle of chapter 34. We are past that point, and Dusk has not spoken to Starling.
The exact page where Dusk looks up and sees Starling's not Starfighter little cargo ship was the page I predicted. And they have not exchanged dialogue yet.
And I want to say, of all the people who submitted answers to our book giveaway quiz where they were trying to guess how far off you guys were going to be on this question, nobody nailed your answer perfectly, Trevor. No one guessed the exact number of pages that you were off. But there were a lot of people that got like 12 pages or less within the number. Apparently, wow. You were more predictable than Paul.
I feel like that checks out.
Paul, are we at your prediction yet? Not quite.
We are not yet at my prediction. No.
Okay. I will continue with my summary here. I just needed to get that off my chest. Okay. Fair. So, as we stated, Dusk lands on the island within minutes of also Starling landing on the island. What are the odds of that? And so now we have a standoff, a three-body problem between the Malwish, Starling, and Dusk, a rowboat, as they say in the audiobook. And yeah, so now we have to hash out between the Malwish, who have been here for 3 weeks, the Colonel guy who tries to befriend Dusk, and Starling and her crew, who get in some hot water pretty quick here. So that's our episode.
That is indeed our episode. Things are about to get a little, standoffish, as you said. A little bit of politics, a little bit of social deduction about to go down here. We do get a new character. How do they say it in the audiobook?
Danger.
Colonel.
Danger?
Danger.
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 I definitely thought it was danger.
It's like, not danger.
Danger for a while.
The way I would have guessed to spell it is D-A-E-J-E-R. Danger.
Really?
And you're pretty spot on. You're close. You just added an extra E. It's even simpler. It's D-A-J-E-R.
Oh, okay.
But there's a funny line in there where Dusk thinks to himself that his name is pronounced with a strange cadence.
Yeah.
And I wondered if the audiobook was going to play into that, or if that's just, keying into Dusk is the one who speaks differently than we might. And so Danger sounds weird to him.
We can get into this now. Back in Mistborn, I believe it's the release party of the Lost Metal. I think you guys were here for this question. Somebody asked Brandon if the people of the Elendil Basin or the people of Mistborn in general were inspired from French culture and French language? And the answer is yes. And then we had just briefly met our Malwish in the book previous to The Lost Metal. And so the second question was, okay, are the Malwish inspired by German and German language? And the answer was yes. So the weird cadence question that Dusk has in this chapter here, I think is kind of just referring to like harsh German accent, and he's kind of like taken aback by it. That's the best I got for you.
But wouldn't then, I was kind of thinking along those lines, because, you know, we've got our Malwish character on the ship, on the Dynamic that's with us. Her name's Leonore. And yeah, she speaks with a little bit of a accent that kind of leans that direction. You know, she says things like yeah instead of yes and things like that. But would that mean that Dager's name would be like Dyer or something like that?
Dyer, yeah. Probably.
Dyer.
Dyer. Yeah.
See, that's like going French on it.
Probably.
That is going, yeah.
Anyway.
It's probably more aggressive than Dager, as they say it in the book.
But anyway, we've got Colonel Dager with us. Red-haired, I think it says. He's got that face implant mask thing going on that the rest of them do. And then he specifically has hoses, like Dune style, run into his nose. And he's getting a constant drip of something.
Space commander from the Malwish Imperials. This guy is Darth Vader.
Yeah, almost.
just need to throw it out there. This guy's Darth Vader.
What was your guys' take on this guy?
Yeah, so Dager is very... It becomes apparent really quick that he knows way more than you expect. You know, it's kind of almost like, oh, we're getting pulled over or like checked out. But like, you know, hide in the basement. We'll be okay. We'll just talk to him and be on our way. And he like knows everything already. Like he's got it figured out. Very advanced. He's like very smart. And then he apparently has lots of crazy tools to detect anything and everything, even stuff they think is not going to be possible to detect. So I think it becomes pretty evident pretty quick that this guy is very well prepared and very ahead of the curve, like Cosmere wise, like, you know, very leading edge technology and everything. So yeah.
So something I noticed, I don't know if I bet Elliot actually would have noticed this more better than Paul would. When Dusk shows up and he starts chatting with him, he asks Dusk his name. Did you guys catch this? And Dusk says, I am sixth of the Dusk. And then from that point on, what does Dager call him?
He calls him sixth.
Calls him sixth. So Dager's trying to get all like buddy pal with him and call him by his first name, but he doesn't understand the language well enough to realize that Dusk is the name and sixth of is his title, like it is his last name, if you will. So he calls him sixth as if that would be his first name and of the Dusk would be his last name. And it's really interesting to listen once you key into that, because Dager will call him sixth, and then we're in the point of view of Dusk, and he will refer to himself as Dusk. So Dager thinks he's got this, you know, buddy pal system with Dusk right off the bat, but Dusk specifically doesn't correct him to call him Dusk, just lets him call him sixth. And I thought that was really interesting to go back and forth between that. I don't know if it's just an interpretation thing, but
yeah. Yeah, he knows like right away that Dusk is a local, right? Like he keys into that, and so yeah, you're right, Trevor. He instantly is like, "We're gonna be best friends, you and me, pal. Like we're gonna be besties."
And he tries to grill him a little bit on how did you get here. Right? he's asking the questions of like, what, why are you here?
How'd you get past the snake?
Yeah. He's like, oh, I just dropped in out in the middle of nowhere.
Isn't Dusk like, yeah, of course. Yeah. You just, all of us do it. We just, you know, go past the snake, you know?
Yeah. It's different for everybody.
Yeah.
We have a large invested entity is what everybody else calls it. But Dusk is like, no, that's a snake. That's a snake. I don't care what you call it. That's a snake. Yeah. So apparently we actually get most of this in chapter 35, which is the dynamic crew before they get arrested. They're like watching the snake from their ship. And they give us a whole spiel about invested entities and subastrals and all that, which I thought was actually really good. This invested entity got too close to people and is now locked in a giant snake form because too many people have thought of it as a giant snake thing. So now it is a giant snake thing. On top of that, we get some definitions about subastrals, and Shadesmar literally stretches and expands the more the minds on the planet stretch and expand to interpret the Cosmere. On top of that, we then get final definitions on what it means to invert the land and the sea on your Shadesmar and how you can interpret that because Dromanad is a sea planet, it doesn't bother flipping land and sea because that's not how they think about it on the planet, because they're a seafaring culture. So they just leave it as sea because we live in the middle of the sea. So that's what Shadesmar is going to do. I thought all of this was so nice to finally get in a canon Cosmere page. Like, we knew all this from asking Brandon over the years, and I've told you guys these types of things, but to finally have Ed tell us all this, I loved it.
I think it's really cool too. The nature of the cognitive realm and that little bit about Shadesmar grows as the inhabitants of the Cosmere become more aware of the universe they live in.
Yeah.
So cool. Cause it's relatable too, right? You and I know that we live on Earth and that there's other planets like Mars and Jupiter flying around the same solar system. But do we have any mental perspective on the actual distance between us and Mars? I don't think we do.
Or us and the next star.
Yeah.
Like, as if we were to meet another planet from another solar system, then our minds would then incorporate that in our daily lives.
Right.
But we don't right now. We don't
right.
care how far four light years is away. Like, I don't care.
Yep. And so it's I found it easy to relate to. Man, I feel like I'm somewhat solar system aware, and I still don't grasp the immense distances that space has. And so makes total sense to me that in Shadesmar, people think planets are not all that far away. And so in Shadesmar, they're not. But as they learn more and more, they stretch and they become further and further. That's fascinating to me.
This is a bunny trail, but I've wanted to ask Brandon this for a long time and I haven't got the opportunity. What do digital assets do in Shadesmar? If I were to think of a video game and then go try to find it in Shadesmar, would it be physical in Shadesmar? I've been wanting to ask him for a long time.
That's a good question, actually. But wouldn't the answer just be yes, right? Or
but it's not. But it's not real.
It doesn't. It is real. It's a program, right?
Right.
Storable on a hard drive, right? Type of thing. That doesn't. And making it something real in the cognitive realm does not make it a physical thing in the physical realm, right? It's still a tiny bites of memory, right? But I feel like it would be a thing. Like, you could go find the bead for The Last of Us or something.
Right, know? Exactly.
yourself, whatever.
I've wanted, like, for example, The Last of Us is not real. Like, you can't go find The Last of Us on the planet. However,
you can find the disc for it.
If I refer to The Last of Us, you know what I'm talking about, even though it's not real. It's a cognitive property. We both understand the same relation, even though we're not talking about anything real.
With the same, so it would be that way for all digital things, like digital,
I would assume,
movies,
so. Yeah.
Videos, photos.
You could go find the Lord of the Rings Extended Edition in Shadesmar.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what that means.
I feel,
and I'd love to ask Brandon what that means, but
yeah, fair. Okay, I was really trying to look and find it. I don't know if y'all remember this. I think someone made a comment either on YouTube or in our Discord, and I don't remember. And they talked about perpendicularities across the Cosmere. Or did we talk about this already on an episode?
It depends on where you're going with this question.
I saw this thing about perpendicularities across the Cosmere. As you get closer to a perpendicularity, it gains more similarity with the world that you would cross into, like in the physical realm. So, you know, Shadesmar on Roshar, you fall into the beads.
Oh, yeah, they talk about this in the chapter, yeah.
Okay, it was in the chapter?
Yeah, they talk about this in the chapter.
I don't know where I thought I saw this. I thought I saw that, like, someone commenting and talking about this, because they were talking about how it becomes, like, water here, right? And how that's, like, okay, well, I'm glad I'm not crazy. I heard that from somewhere. I guess it was actually
the Ed told you in the book.
I'm an idiot. Wow. I thought Ed was in our Discord, I guess. I don't know. Here I was frantically trying to scroll. Paul? I don't know, man. I need a lot of things.
Okay, so the way Ed describes it is the people on the planet define their subastral based on the way they think about things. So he uses Roshar as an example and Scadrial, the two that we know the best. On Roshar, it manifests as a bunch of little beads, like the currency that they use on the planet. He specifically says that. And then on Scadrial, it's all misty because they've got mist everywhere. That's how they think about things. So I really enjoyed these definitions just as a concrete, nailed down definition of Shadesmar that, yeah, it's going to change based on where you are. And that's just what it does, because that's how different people think, and that's just how it is.
I have a random question, which we don't need to dive too far into, but I want to briefly revisit our, what were they called? Those giant calamity, weird humanoid beasts that we saw. What were those called? It was like entities? An episode or two ago. Yeah, the entity things.
Yes, the cognitive entities.
Cognitive entities. I hate to revisit that. I know we just talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but did Ed have a definite answer as to what it is? Because it talked about it being massively destructive, and in my head, it was almost like anti-investiture, like based.
Yeah. So here's what I think you've been told. Trevor, fill in any gaps I miss here that you remember. When they first encountered it, they talked about it as a negative investiture entity, which I thought that was kind of interesting. They then have given us a little bit of info that these things come from, oh, what's a planet?
Threnody.
Thank you. They come from the event that happened near the planet Threnody, where is it Ambition?
Ambition was killed by Odium.
Yep.
And Mercy.
And so the death.
Sorry, hold on. Need to be exact there. Ambition was killed by Odium, and Mercy was there. That's what we know. We don't know if Mercy was involved or not.
Good clarification. So Ambition was destroyed, and that event was so violent that it created these negative investiture entities. And they're very dangerous. They're drawn to investiture, as we saw before. But like Trevor was talking about a few minutes ago, this giant snake thing that we've just seen here on this island that Dusk has convinced is the Daquara is another one of these things. It could be that crazy skyscraper-sized, many-armed thing that's super dangerous, but it's been made to be a little bit less harmful because it stuck around the planet Dromonad too much. And the thoughts and myths of Dromonad latched onto it, and it has become what the people of Dromonad think should be there,
right,
in Shadesmar.
Okay. I'm really glad you said that, because that exactly answers the question I had. My question was, if they're made of negative investiture, is the impact of people's cognition, what people think about it, is that like not affected, or does that affect it differently, or what? But that answers it. It's affected, I guess, per usual. I was just curious about that. While we were learning more about this here, I was thinking back to that of, like, hypothetically, if everyone in the universe, in the Cosmere, thought of this multi-armed dude as like a puppy dog, like, could they, you know, turn him into a puppy dog? I guess,
yes.
I guess the answer is yes. Okay, cool. I didn't know if
you mean the Nightmare Painter. That's what they do. And you mean the Nightmare Painter. You've got nightmares wandering around the city, and you go paint it as a bamboo stick, and it's a bamboo stick.
Absolutely. I was getting hung up on it being negative investiture and wondering if that worked differently. And the answer is no. I was not certain of that.
Yumi's a fantastic comparison, actually. Are the nightmares from you, are they negative investiture too?
I have no idea.
Oh, I need to remember the end of that book. I actually just started it again today or yesterday. So I'm like four chapters in. So I'll let you know.
Okay. Awesome.
I want to say they might be.
The end of that book, Yumi spoilers. The end of that book has something to do with like a machine and an exploding and negative investiture everywhere, or
maybe
too much investiture everywhere. I don't remember what the details.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, the big giant sea snake on the island. It's guarding an inner island kind of within the atoll that's around them. And there's a bunch of other little skull snakes that are like the baby snakes, and then the big mama snake all there. Colonel Dager talks about how he's already lost some people to the big snake trying to get through it. He is convinced that the perpendicularity is being guarded by the snake.
He's right. Not Dusk's perpendicularity. There's going to be multiple.
Oh, there's a prediction.
There's going to be one per planet. So three total, I think, in the Dromonad system. Three inhabitable Dromonad planets, right? From our first episode of this? Or four?
Sounds right.
Something like that? I don't know. That's my guess, is that Ambitions or Autonomy is going to have three separate perpendicularities on the three planets that are relatively close to each other.
Okay.
And the Daquara is guarding one of them. I have something funny to point out. We just talked about Threnody and Ambition exploding, all that. In chapter 35, when the dynamic sees this sea snake, Nas jokingly says to Starling, "Hey, is that a relative of yours?" Because it's a sea snake and she's a dragon. Ha ha, very funny.
Uh-huh.
But more accurately, it's probably a relative of Nas's, because Nas is a shade.
Yep.
And this is a Threnody invested entity. Like, Nas is probably closer related to it than Starling is. I thought that was funny.
I was going to say, honestly, I think what's more surprising is that Dager doesn't have any like reaction to this crew. I mean, they're trying to hide everybody, but it's like a dragon, a shade, a sleepless, like an aether hand. Like, is this really normal at this time in the Cosmere, or is this still a crazy group even for them? You know, like it is really we're throwing every crazy Cosmere being into the same boat, literally. Yeah.
Speaking of trying to hide everybody, what did we just maybe learn about Chrysalis?
She's got a secret box. Well, I know that's not what you were fishing for, but
it's not.
She's got a secret box, which she's currently hiding. Yeah, it's Hoyt's.
It's Hoyt's box.
Yeah,
and she knows about it, and she's the smuggler department. She's an assassin. Yeah, big deal.
Assassin, big deal. So hold on a second. So you think that a sleepless assassinating the president of the Malwish nation on Scadrial?
What did Starling say? Like 2 years ago, 10 years ago, or something like that.
It's not super recent.
Well, it's like relatively recent history, if you will. And then, Starling makes the quick assumption that Chrysalis is on the run from the Malwish, and Chrysalis very explicitly says before she goes and hides in her box that I've taken the oath of the first or something like that, or sworn the I don't remember what she says, and I will no longer hurt another being or something like that. And she specifically doesn't say that she didn't in the past, but she says she will no longer. So I think that, our crab friend's a little fishy.
Did y'all think much about that, this Oath of the First, and what that could mean? Because I have a couple thoughts.
I assumed it was just like a pacifist oath, like I'm no longer a part of Mr. Kremling Man, I'm kind of doing my own thing.
Yes, yeah. But like the Oath of the First, like the first what? My thought, and I'm going a little with, you know, it's been a long time since we've read it, but spoilers for Dawn Shard. I feel like Dawn Shard and Edge Dancer were where we learned probably the most about Sleepless, right? And specifically Dawn Shard, we get communication between Sleepless. And don't we learn that there, maybe I'm getting this mixed up with Chandra.
I was going to bring up Chandra if you didn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, we learn that there's kind of like the generations to them? It's like the Chandra, where it's like generational. Not like there's like a ton of generations, but like the first, second, third, fourth.
Yes.
At least to like six or seven of them or something like that, right?
Quick recap. Miss Mornera 1, I believe there's 7 generations or maybe 8 generations of Chandra. Mm-hmm. And the firsts are still around. And you're supposed to be like super pacifist and don't kill anybody, don't involve yourself in anything as a Chandra. However, all the Chandra that we see that have names break this at some point. Like it's not a super nailed down thing. It's not like religious for them. That's where my brain went, is the Oath of the First. The Oath of the First Chandra to like do no harm. That is a thing that we already know about.
Yeah, especially on Scadrial.
Yeah.
Don't know if she got tangled up in somehow, but yeah, I was thinking about that, or I was thinking if somehow there are generations of Sleepless. That's why I'm questioning. I don't remember enough about what we learn in Dawn Shard. Something in my brain was telling me that there were generations like the Chandra, but for Sleepless. And if so, then that was telling me that the first generation Sleepless are pacifists or potentially good or neutral beings in the Cosmere. But I don't think that's probably not right. It was something I was thinking of.
I think you're remembering something, Paul, because it's ringing a bell in my mind as well. It probably was Dawn Shard where we saw Sleepless speaking and discussing a little bit about themselves. I'm wondering if it's not generational, but individual. It's, you know, I'm the 23rd. Like, I'm literally the 23rd Sleepless horde ever.
Yeah.
Because we know there's not that many of them. So this could be kind of a callback to, like, the very first Sleepless ever.
That very well could be. Because I think you're right. It may not have been generational. It may have been, like, they're numbered. Like, that's almost their name.
That's what I was thinking.
I'm number 102, you know? Anyways. Don't have to go further with that. But that was something I was thinking of like, okay, first, who's the first or what group is the first? And what would that mean for maybe like, in my head, I'm like, is there a whole like group of Sleepless that are like pacifists or something like that, or sworn off assassinations at least.
So we talked about the dragon jokes that Nas was making, but then our new friend Colonel Dager starts to make some dragon jokes as well as he and Starling start to chat.
I don't know if they're much as jokes as opposed to like actual stereotypes that he applies to Starling. He says that he talks to Starling and immediately brings up, yeah, I want to make you a deal. I'm not into your whimsical riddles and deceptive offers. I want to make you a deal as you're kind of prone to do. I thought that was very funny. This is like definitely a old English style dragon that we're referring to, like the stereotypes from 100 years ago, putting a dragon in your book.
And you can just imagine Starling rolling her eyes at that moment of, you know, I'm not that kind of dragon.
Right. I thought that was quite funny. Did you either of you catch the cover story that Starling uses first before she pivots to like B plan and C plan? Because this directly relates to something we talked about in previous episodes.
It had to do with like plotting new routes to get a leg up over her smuggling competitors or something like that.
Yes. Okay. Gentlemen, do you remember our Millennium Falcon joke?
Yeah. Yes.
This is a Millennium Falcon joke. She's trying to do the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. She's trying to reduce the distance between herself and Silverlight to compete with her competitors. This is a Millennium Falcon joke. Like, I can't help but think this might be intentional at this point. That the Millennium Falcons, the whole joke, for anyone who's not super Star Wars literate, is the Millennium Falcon is famous galaxy-wide for doing the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. Now everybody has a bunch of questions what that means, because parsec is a distance, not a speed. So doing the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs means you're like bending space-time and doing it in less distance. And that's what Starling's cover story is here. She's like, I'm trying to reduce the distance between me and Silverlight so as to make a shorter route and compete with my competitors. This is a Millennium Falcon joke.
I mean, now that I think more about it, what? The Millennium Falcon team involved a smuggler, a Jedi, a princess, a Wookiee, and Troy, right? So, like, that's a pretty eclectic group. So we really, really do have...
Yeah.
You know, we've got some serious Millennium Falcon going on here. It was certainly a joke, but, like, I mean... It's only becoming more evident. Maybe he wrote this right after watching some Star Wars, you know?
Maybe. And then she pivots to fake mail, and then Dager guesses her trump card on a second thing that she's quote-unquote smuggling and calls her right on it that she's here for the perpendicularity. So we're not wasting any time in this book. Go ahead.
That's what I was thinking when Aaron said earlier, like, Dager, like, knows his stuff. He, like, there's no, like, moment where he's like, oh, okay, yeah, I believe you. He's like, nope, you're doing this. And then, like, another story comes out. Nope, you're doing that. Like he knows it already. He was not, like, playing around, which really surprised me, I guess. I'm like I said, these guys are really advanced and... It's pretty evident here. It's like, how do you sneak anything past these guys? I don't think you do.
The Malwish arrest them by the end of this episode. And Starling's not worried about it until Dager, like, fully explains, no, this is actually, like, legit. Because how inter-Cosmere treaties work is if you have a treaty with the locals... then that is part of your empire and you have jurisdiction there. And so Starling shows up and it's like, oh, the Malwish don't have any actual, you know, jurisdiction here. We just need to make sure we don't get in a firefight because we're going to lose that, obviously. But they can't do anything to us legally because, you know, this is international waters or international unsea, if you will. And then Dager's like, no, here's my contract with the locals, which is legit. We saw at the beginning of the book, the Malwish absolutely have been in contact with Dromanan. And the dynamic is under arrest, like, for trespassing. That's just the rules.
Which, for me, brings up a couple of questions, because that, to me, seems to imply that there are some kind of intergalactic treaties.
Yeah.
That the Malwish are making these claims probably based on some kind of interplanetary agreement. Otherwise, they would just be kind of following their own laws. But the fact that Starling is immediately scared by this makes me think that there's either treaties or laws, or there's some kind of like peacekeeping force that's going to come enforce this. That's going to agree. Yep. Sorry. The Malwish have jurisdiction here. So you're their prisoner. We can't save you.
The Silverlight cops.
Something like that.
I am a little curious if it matters that Dager is not where he thinks he is.
Uh-huh.
I think we are on a perpendicularity, but it's going to warp us to not where we think it's going to warp us to, or at least warp us to not where Dager thinks it's going to warp him to. That's my guess, is we are going to find a perpendicularity, and it's going to turn out that Dager doesn't actually have jurisdiction here, because it's this other planet that we haven't met yet. Oops.
Ooh, that's interesting, Trevor. I'm now thinking, like, what if that's like the big Sanderlanch, if you will?
Mm.
Like, we go through this, you know, perpendicularity, and we're on Roshar. Like,
we're not going to be on Roshar. I mean, like, Dromanad 2. Like, we're going to be on the next planet over.
Well, yeah, I know. But, like, you know, if that is the case, then there are some pretty fun things he could do. I understand this is not Roshar. We're not there. But there are a lot of fun ways that could go. You know. Okay.
Think back to the magician's nephew. They pop up to the little portal room when there's a bunch of identical pools everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they go jump in the wrong one. That's what's about to happen here. We're all going to go jump into Narnia accidentally instead of Dromanad.
All right. Since we're going down this hole, I had to go and pull up the copper mine here because I don't have my Arcanum Unbounded near my desk. Let me remind you of what we read at the beginning. I can
see it right behind you.
No, those are my Way of Kings and the rest of it.
Okay.
Arcanum Unboundedness. Not on my shelf for some reason. But the Copper Mind has all this info, so I'm going to read carefully for you guys here.
Choose the time machine.
Chris.
You don't need to use the time machine.
I don't need to use the time machine. You do if you go on the Copper Mind. Chris notes that there are four planets in the Dromanad system that are within the habitable zone. In the little star chart diagram, it looks like there's a few more that are like gas giant types, but four planets, three of which have fully developed human societies.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to remind you of at this point, but there's four planets, three of which all have human societies on them.
What does fully developed mean according to Chris?
I don't know that.
Is First of the Sun our non-fully developed one because they haven't started talking in space terms yet?
I feel like that'd be... My guess is that's the cutoff line. It's like they know there's other planets out there. Maybe they've made contact. Or maybe it's like they're able to make contact.
Or does fully developed mean like language? You know, like what is fully developed to Chris mean?
I think this has come up before, and they talk about like the development of planets or something like that. And I think it's like a technology threshold, or maybe a Cosmere awareness threshold, which could be like through investiture or other things. But yeah, I don't know if I definitely don't have like a specific definition I think I could put on that.
I think reading this Coppermine page, I wish I had my Arcanum Unbounded on me, but I don't. Reading this Coppermine page, I think First of the Sun is included in one of those three.
I would assume it is, but yeah. Interesting.
All right, what else we got in our notes? Oh, I've got one thing I wanted to point out. In chapter 36, there's kind of an offhand mention about ethers again, but it's actually sent me down a little bit of a bunny trail thought path. It's just randomly mentioned that, yeah, you have to have ethers. You have to make sure you can harvest them. This might have been when they were talking about like why perpendicularities are so valuable. And then it says you have to go to Lumar to get ethers. We've been to the Lumar. We've seen how that goes. Or you have to go to Adatil's people for the lower quality stuff. That
the cheap offshore.
Yes. That I thought was actually kind of interesting because I was assuming a little bit up until this point that Lumar was the only source of those and that Adatil just had Adatil. I can never say these names straight.
You have it right.
Adatil. Yeah, you're making it Adatil, too complicated. Okay. It's just Adatil. Okay.
Adatil. And the Adatil's people just had like a source and they're not from Lumar, but they do things with the ether. That specifically says that they have a source that's not Lumar.
I assumed that there were more ether worlds besides Lumar. So this was not a big surprise to me because after reading both The Lost Metal and Tress, I quickly made the assumption that Twin Soul was not from Lumar and that he's from somewhere else. So
I think you're right.
Adatil's planet. Cause he's got like the big fancy titles about kingdoms and stuff. And
yeah, he does. I'm not, interesting ones.
Not sure if that would be on Lumar or not.
That is interesting. I wonder if there's any like equivalent, right? I'm like, would this hypothetically be the same thing of like, oh yeah, if you want Stormlight, but like you've got Lifelight instead or Tower Light or something instead. Like, I don't know. I'm sure it functions differently. That's probably quite an irrelevant conversation piece. So we can move forward. I did not pick that up though, Elliot. I'm glad you mentioned that because I totally was assuming Adatil is from Lumar, or at least has spent a lot of time on Lumar, because how else do you get Aether powers? I was not on the same level as Trevor.
Adatil?
It was many other places.
Adatil is from Daughtry, which we were told at the beginning of the, or at the beginning of the book.
Yes.
But that didn't exclude that Aethers were from Daughtry. That's like, you know, that could have, it could have meant that she picked up her Aether from somewhere else, but you know.
I had just one more thing, really, from these chapters. Chapter 37, we've kind of already covered most of what's there. Chapter 37 is where Dusk actually lands on the island and the Skadrians kind of immediately take him into custody, although treating him as an honored guest, of course, as they rifle through all of his stuff. There's one part of Chapter 37 I wanted to point out, though. Dager asks him a very strange question. I didn't think too much of this on my first read, but reading this again this time, I zoned in on this. He says that they get talking about the birds because he notices that Dusk has two birds. And he asks him, what spirits are your birds bonding with? And I passed by that the first time without thinking, but then reading it this time, is that not a rather strange question? The whole like spirits, entities that are bonding with, it almost seems like he's thinking of Roshar, where you've got Spren. And we've already seen the term Nile bond used, I think, in this book already. So we're assuming the birds are doing a Nile bond. But in our Spren relationship, the Spren, the spirit, bonds with the human. So if I was in Dager's shoes, I feel like the assumption that I would make is that the bird is the spirit, that the bird is the Spren equivalent, and it's bonding with him, the human.
Dager's making the assumption that the bird has the power, and the bird is bonding with the spirit, and Dusk has no power. He just has birds that have power.
Okay, so Dager thinks that the bird has a Spren.
Correct. He thinks the bird has a Nahel bond with something else that's not Dusk.
Hmm. Okay.
But let's back up to your original premise here. It is an odd question from a Skadrian.
Yes.
It's not an odd question from like anybody else, because, you know, spirits bonding with people and having powers is super common around the Cosmere, except for Scadrial. Scadrial is very physical in its magic, whereas Roshar, Canticle, Threnody, even like Elantris or Cell or whatever you want to call it, is very spiritual in its power. So that is a really interesting question from a Scadrian's point of view, which is what I keyed into.
I still think it's an interesting jump of logic that he's made, because I think I would assume that there's something spiritual about the birds, not that the birds are tapping into something else that's spiritual, which is clearly where his mind is going.
Right. And Dusk doesn't correct him.
I feel like this is a red herring, because Aviar have always bonded with people, right? It's unique that it's a Nile bond and things like that. So maybe there's some new mechanic. I say mechanic. New aspect to what makes up a person, an entity in the Cosmere. But I'm like, people been on bond in Aviars for essentially as long as we know. And I don't think there's any precursor or extra thing you have to have, or you have to be from some place, or any, literally any like requirement, right? Obviously you have to bond, but like, you know, nothing else. So I don't know. It's what you're saying, Elliot. I feel like it implies that there's like a different spirit either within or tied to Dusk, or it's not bonded to him at all. Is it? I mean, we have seen Patchy talk to him, right? Is it like connected, capital C connected through Patchy in a way? If so, that'd be kind of odd how that would maintain with like everybody, you know, everybody period who has an AVR. But yeah, I feel like it's almost like a, I don't know, red herring or something.
All right, quick, how's your Scadrial trivia? What do we burn to figure out if someone's burning metals?
Not copper, bronze. But bronze.
Bronze, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
All right, so after...
I'm actually pretty confident, yeah.
Because copper, it's copper cloud to cover that so that we can burn, and, do you burn bronze? And
bronze
to find
is an alloy of copper, so should check out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If someone were to burn bronze on this island, would they then see Dusk vibrating because he's using his new worm paste to hear Patchy?
I think so.
I am not going to answer that question directly.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But I will point out something else that we have already seen. At one point, I think this was a little further back, maybe even when we were fighting the giant entity thing, Starling specifically says, when she's talking about the current and the Nell, that beings who can sense investiture can sense the current. And in that moment, it seemed like she was referring directly to Allomancy. Yeah,
she references it specifically that
all
you need is to be a simple Allomancer and you could find the current. Yeah.
Yeah. So could a bronze seeker person sense the current? I think definitely yes. Can they sense Dusk while he's sensing the current? Raffo?
Yes.
All right. Does that do it for these chapters? Anything else, gentlemen?
Paul, is Chrysalis going to save the day? She went and hid. Or is Chrysalis just like going to hide for the rest of the book?
That's a really good question. I feel like something has to happen here, right? I feel like logically it'd make the most sense for it to be with Dusk strolling up out of nowhere. Maybe that's when we'll see Dusk speak to Starling. So he'll say something and Danger's not going to want to hurt, you know, go against his new bud, you know, his new friend. So maybe that'll be the case. It would be cool. but I feel like if I feel like it would not go well if Chrysalis shows herself in the face with our Malwish people.
I feel like Chrysalis is going to strand us, to be honest. I think like when we're arrested by the Malwish, she's just going to take off in the ship.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Or maybe she'll steal
come back later and play a role. I don't think Chrysalis is going to be the one to save us from this situation, you know.
Maybe Chrysalis will steal an actual starship instead of the cargo ship.
Yeah.
Well, have some faith. Have some faith, guys, in our Sleepless.
No.
I do actually have a lot of faith in the Sleepless. I don't think she's going to be best suited to maybe this. I mean, maybe she will. You know.
Or
it could be written that way, absolutely. But
maybe the Skadrians will feed her one crab at a time to the snake.
Oh. I don't think we're gonna see that happen.
You don't think so?
No, and I don't think so.
Each little crab would call for help before it dies.
Maybe they just kind of, you know, gladiatorial combat style. That it's giant snake versus giant crab being conglomeration, and they go at it, Clash of the Titans style.
Or maybe the Malwish make hemallergic spikes out of every single little crab.
Whoa.
Interesting, because isn't it still one entity, right?
Yes.
Probably a lot of investiture involved in that one identity, in that one entity, but I don't know. Does it matter which crab you get, or can you make one from any of them?
Yeah, that's a good question. Does it matter how the crab perceives itself? If it perceives itself as a crab, or if it perceives itself as an arm?
We're starting to sound like a Dragon Steel Nexus.
What if you shoot through the snake into your buddy? Can you hemallerge your buddy through the snake?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Surely.
No. Oh goodness.
That might be a negative investiture spike, though. That might get.
Yeah. How would a negative investiture spike work?
It'd probably just explode.
Yeah, it would explode if you then took in investiture.
Right. If you went back to schedule and tried to tap into the disc. You're
fine until you do anything else, yeah.
Right.
But void light, if you power your stuff off of void light, then are you fine?
Yeah.
So if you get some void light imbued door and you breathe that in, then...
I think we're onto something big here.
If you're trying to make Elantrian runes in Shadesmar, do you just draw nothing because there's nothing in Shadesmar?
Oh dear!
You know how you have to like draw the map. You just draw nothing, and you get your door
just blank. They all work.
Yep.
Well, I feel like I better cut this off now before we spin off into a never-ending whirlpool of crazy.
Do you have to draw a little dot for the island, physics, or a little donut questions. For this island?
Somebody mute him, Paul. Do you have that power? Mute him over there.
Yeah, he can turn my camera off. That's for sure.
Hold on. Shut him down. Shut him down.
I muted him. You're welcome, everybody. He can just click on mute, but it's the
phone. Well, with that, I think we better wrap it up here for episode 284. We'll be back next week, continuing on into the Isles of the Emberdark. Next week, we're going to cover just three chapters, a few bigger ones ahead of us, chapter 38, 39, and 40. With that, thank you for joining me, Paul and Trevor.
See you next time.
That's what I was going to say.